going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Yo, Paulie!
Paulie's a great name.
Yo, Paulie!
What'd you do for Paulie? Anything?
Me, Paulie! I was responsible!
Paulie, we're here because of you!
Chris and Amy show hour two today. We are done at 12. Then it is the Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas and me. We go to the guest line today. We bring in Matt Pauly, the host of Sports Open Line on KMOX, and the Redbird Rush Hour, which happens at 5 o'clock with Kevin Wheeler. So the two of them will be together for an hour. And then we've got Sports Open Line tonight. Cardinals are off today. They dropped one yesterday. In Atlanta, the Blues are playing tonight. Very important game three. They are down 2-0. We'll get to all of that. Matt Pauly is with us now. How's it going, Matthew?
It's going all right. How are you guys?
We're great.
We're great because he's my new best friend. Matt and I are best friends now.
Pauly?
We are.
Yeah.
Oh, because you were on Sports Open Line last night?
Yeah, because we're friends and that's what we do.
That's
so
cool.
I was on Sports Open Line and now he's on our show.
So we're doing better than the Cardinals bullpen. What is going on with them? Is it just that they're not good? Is there a chance of a rebound? Well, of course, there's a chance of anything. What do you think is happening with that pen?
That's a good question. It's different things with different guys. Like, first off, there's obviously three guys that you can really trust right now, and Kyle Leahy, Phil Maton, and Ryan Helsley. Beyond that, guys are not performing at the level that you want them to perform at, which is certainly a frustrating thing. And we saw what happened with Fernandez yesterday, and he is definitely struggling right now. It's one of those things where anything that can go bad will go bad, and right now that's where this bullpen is at. Like, I don't think there's this like overwhelming issue that can go ahead and just be fixed right away, and you're gonna like everybody's gonna get better. It just so happens right now that more than half of the bullpen are filled with guys who are not performing.
So, Matt, how do you go about fixing this? Is this a development issue? Is this you search the market for bullpen pitchers? Do you say, well, we were kind of in a transition year anyway, so we ride it out?
Yeah, that's the question I'm trying to figure out. Because, look, if they were just like saying, hey, this is a year where we're going to give the ball to the young guys and we're going to let them learn, and sometimes it's going to be good and a lot of times it's not going to be good, and that's what this year is all about. Okay, I can actually live with that. That's something that I can accept. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is they're giving the ball to like veteran guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Phil Maton has been pitched 13 of the first 23 games. They're handing the ball to JoJo Romero and Ryan Fernandez, guys who, you know, Fernandez is still a young guy, but guys who have been high leverage relievers for this team before. If this was something where Chris Roycroft is still here and he's being given the ball, if they were trusting Matt Svaanson and he was getting it, then I would understand it. But the game is being put together and they're handing the ball to relief pitchers who are not those like young give runway guys. They're giving them to, I think, the individuals that have the experience outside of Kyle Leahy, the experience of being in those spots. So that tells me that that it isn't so much about runway. It isn't so much about the transition year. It's about them trying to put guys in position to have success. And if that is the case, then maybe it is something where they try to look to the outside. And it's still really early, and you don't see trades in April, right? But, I mean, there's people out there that if they wanted to make the bullpen better, there are people out there that are still available that could make this bullpen better. I would love to be able to get into the head of John Mozeliak right now and know how he's feeling about this, because this is not just a case of, oh, they're just giving the ball to the young guys and it's a struggle. No, they're veteran guys and guys who have been in those roles before are getting it, and it's not working. So I don't know if that answers your question, and kind of rambling all over the place, but it's a really weird situation right now.
Yeah, so all right. Oliver Marmol's been getting a lot of criticism, and that always happens when a team isn't good, not playing well. Manager first. It's always the manager first. Mm-hmm. And I have my philosophy on managers in baseball that I think we way overrate how much influence they have on what happens on the field. They have influence, but it isn't like an offensive coordinator or a head coach in the NFL. It's not the same. And I think we were looking for reasons. We think if we fix this, we fire this guy, then we'll move on to somebody else, then everything will be better. I think it completely ignores the reality of the situation. And he, after the game yesterday, basically said, in so many words, this is what we have, and there's no help mm-hmm. coming. Like, this is what we have to do. And he's not wrong. He's that's what they gave him to work with. And it's not working. The players right now, in terms of the bullpen, are just not good enough, Matt.
Yeah, and look, I really like Ollie. I sometimes I'm on an island on that one when I'm talking.
I'm with you too.
I like him. I think he's a good manager. Now, some of these moves he's made recently, I always understand why. Like, one of the things I appreciate about him is he's going to give you an answer every single time on why he made a move, and it's an answer that I understand. Now, I there's times I would make different moves. There's a bunch of things he's actually done recently that I would have probably done a little bit differently, but that doesn't mean I don't understand why he did it the way he did, and it wasn't a legitimate thing. Like, you're right in saying we put way too much on the manager on winning and losing.
And that's just generally speaking, and it's always been that way.
Yeah, it's always been that way, and he's the first guy. The manager is always going to be the first guy, and it happens everywhere. I always talk about when I was in Milwaukee, from the moment I got in there, people were calling for Craig Counsell to be fired. Like, there was, and he's a really, really good manager, and he's obviously still a very good manager with what he's doing with the Cubs. So,
and guess what? He's baseball, gone, and the Brewers are still winning.
Yeah. Baseball fans always want to fire the manager. That's just part of the sport and something that you gotta deal with. I did think it was interesting when he said yesterday that there's nothing coming from below. I'll be curious. I don't think Ryan Fernandez is on the roster when the game gets started tomorrow. I think you have to send him down to AAA and just get some of this pressure off of him, because it's not good for him for the moment. Now, it is for me. It's a little bit frustrating that they're almost completely unwilling to use Matt Swanson. That they just wanted to send Fernandez out there again. I think when you've got a relief pitcher on a 40-man roster, you got to like believe in that guy, and they get you. You can hide a starting pitcher on the 40-man roster because you don't want him to get picked up by another team. You can hide a position player and just to give you a little bit more time before they're ready. But the way Major League Baseball teams churn through relief pitchers, every single relief pitcher that's on the 40-man roster, you have to have some belief in that they can perform at the major league level. And when the Cardinals made the decision to put Swanson on the 40-man this past offseason, that they needed to be able to say, hey, this is somebody that we trust to pitch at the big leagues. And they're not doing that right now. So that's in terms of what happened yesterday, I think that's the only thing that you can like argue in the other direction. Like, where was Swanson? Would have it made sense? And maybe you're using guys in a different order than what you used, but would have it made sense to get him in there because you have to show some trust through him? But we're talking about a guy who's basically the last guy on the roster that's not going to make a huge difference. If Matt Swanson, and I'm not trying to be dismissive of him, but if Matt Swanson is your savior, then you're it's not going to be that much better. Yeah.
Hey, Matt, this is kind of a 30,000-foot view of bullpens, but the way you construct a bullpen, are there different approaches to the kinds of guys that you have? They play such a critical role. Is it, okay, you just want the best pitcher, the hardest thrower? Is it you want a diverse pitching repertoire in your bullpen? How much does the construction matter?
Yeah, I think the construction matters a little bit. You want to have a long guy in the bullpen, somebody who can give you multiple innings, and they have that right now with Steven Matz because he's not in the rotation. Now, when Matz was in the rotation and they brought Munoz in, that was kind of the idea there. You certainly want to have some guys who have strike swing and miss potential because there's times that you need strikeout. Obviously, you want some righties and some lefties in there. It's nice to have a ground ball guy in there if you've got a situation where you really want a ground ball. That being said, though, I think that's changed a little bit in recent years, especially now that pitchers have to face, you know, three hitters or get out of an inning, where it's not like you're bringing in just one guy to face one guy to get a strikeout or to get a ground ball, something like that. But generally speaking, from your high view above, yeah, you want to have a bunch of different pitchers in the bullpen that check a bunch of different boxes.
So tonight, very important night at Enterprise Center at 8:30, which means it'll be like 8:40 or later, the puck will drop in Game 3 of the playoffs, Blues and Jets. Blues are down 2-0. I said this is a must win.
And yeah. I said you really need to win it.
You know, it's a must because if you lose, it's over. And then I called the next game if they lose that one. That's the you have to win or you will die.
Yeah.
So...
Wow.
Tonight's a must win, yes?
Yes, must win. You're not coming back from a 3-0 deficit.
You don't want to call it a you really need to win this?
Yep. No, you have to. It's a must.
Matt is so measured.
Call it you really have to win this? That's called a must win.
No.
Yes?
Because there's a difference between you. Okay, I should say you really should win this. Matt's a pretty measured guy. I think, Matt, you kind of understand where I'm coming from, right? Don't you feel like the must win is overused in sports?
Matt, tell her you don't understand.
I
remember who your best friend is, Matt.
Yeah, you are my best friend. I gotta hold on to that here for first. I don't have a lot of best friends. Like, I can't mess this one up. Look, they're not coming back. They're not coming back from a 3-0 deficit.
Yep.
They're the eights. I would assume that never. I don't know. Somebody can correct me. Text in. I would assume that it has never happened in the history of the National Hockey League that an 8 seed has come back from a 3-0 deficit against the top seed in the first round of the playoffs. Is that a fair assessment? Has that ever happened in NHL history?
I don't know if that's ever happened in sports.
I don't know either.
Well,
like,
there
that
are
would
a lot
be
of
something.
8 seeds. There's no 8 seed in baseball because when the Red Sox came back against the Yankees, there's no 8 seed in baseball, so you can't compare that. Because they were down in 2004.
Well, they don't do seeding like that. But, yeah.
So it's not happening. They're not coming back from a 3-0 deficit.
Well, not
so
with an
go win the stinking game tonight, and then go win Game 4.
Should have won Saturday.
Look, you could have won either of those first two games.
But you also could have lost that last game 4-1. Easily lost that last game 4-1. That was Jordan Binnington standing on his little head.
You had the lead
and just
Saturday.
Saving the team.
Saturday's the game.
Saturday was the game you were supposed to steal. But here's the thing: you win both games, and right, Matt. Now you start. You're starting over. It's a brand new series.
And you're carrying a little momentum back into Winnipeg. So I think one of the really interesting things about this is. There's so many young guys for the Blues who have never played in a playoff game before, and they're just kind of experiencing this for the first time. So for me, it's like extend this series as long as you can. If you can find a way to force a Game 7, then maybe you steal it. Like that's what I'm rooting for right now. I am rooting for the Blues to just find a way to win Game 7, and if that means they win their home games and Winnipeg wins their home games up until you get to 7, and then see if you just happen to find a way to steal it. That's kind of what I think could happen.
Well, tonight's must win.
That's the hope.
Tonight.
That's the hope.
Yep.
They're both the gateways to the West. Winnipeg is the gateway to the West in Canada. Did you know that? Isn't that interesting?
Do they actually? There's no way they call themselves that, right?
No,
you're
they
just
do.
Making that up?
No, it's real.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember this from last time. You know, 2019. I remember this. Yeah, we're both the gateways to the West of our respective countries. Crazy.
Do you want to hear my hot take about that? And I'm not trying to be offensive to St. Louis.
Yeah, go ahead.
Better be careful.
I think the way the country is constructed right now, I actually think, like, I think of Denver as being the start of the West. So Kansas City, to me, is in many ways kind of the gateway towards the West, where I think St. Louis is more of an Eastern. You know, so what? I think we're more of the gateway to the East.
I kind of agree with Matt. No, I think Kansas City is the gateway to the West.
It isn't. You know what? Matt, I'm going to put you in touch with Peter Castor over at Washington University, and he will set you straight on this.
I agree with
you. It's the reason it's the gateway to the West is after the Louisiana Purchase, everybody came through St. Louis.
We know that.
Matt clearly doesn't know that.
I started it
with, like, in the way the country is constructed right now.
The gateway to the West because of the history of the country.
Right. Boy. Yes, I understand that.
Jeez.
But the way the country is constructed right now, I kind of feel like we're more Eastern. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Matt, I get it.
Can we just go back in time and I can pretend I never said that?
Let's go to sports. We'll go to Sports Open Line, and Matt and I will have this at length, this discussion.
Redbird Rush Hour with Kevin Wheeler and Matt Pauly. That is tonight at 5 o'clock or this afternoon at 5 o'clock. And then Sports Open Line with Matt Pauly at 6 until 8. Thank you, Matt.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
Yo, Pauly, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
And we didn't even talk about the most important sports thing from today. It's the NFL draft, and the Bears are picking 10th. Today is the beginning of the playoff run for the Bears.
For what year?
Bear down! It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. The number to visit with the show is 314-436-7900. Continue to text us your annoyances about the game of baseball.
And in a loving way. We all love the game of baseball.
It doesn't have to be. We all love the game, but you can still be annoyed by something in it.
You can. It's like your spouse. You could love your spouse, but be like, man, why does he do this? I think what I'm just trying to clarify is we're not poo-pooing the game. We're poo-pooing.
You can poo-poo the game if you want.
I don't think you should poo-poo the game.
Why? If that's what your feeling is, then poo-poo the game. Go ahead. I don't think that announcers, while they're calling the game, should poo-poo it. I always think that's a really bad look, and some announcers do that. And it's not just baseball. It happens a lot in baseball, especially the older school players who are now analysts. They're like, when I played back in my day, you know, they do all that. And it's kind of happening in basketball a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should poo-poo the game while you're calling it. But if you're thinking about the game after the fact and you want to poo-poo it, then poo-poo it. Do all the poo-poo when you want.
Okay, fine. There are certain things to poo-poo, but I could poo-poo other things more than just baseball.
Yeah.
So we do want to hear from you. Well, I think just to give people an idea of what we're talking about, Matt was poo-pooing the idea that there's no consistency in ballpark dimensions. We mentioned the green giant in Fenway and how if a ball hits the green giant, that would have been a home run in a different ballpark.
I know I'm in the minority there, and most baseball purists would, you know, crucify me, but I...
That seems a little extreme.
Not literally, but, you know, a basketball court is all the same, you know, dimensions across the board. An NHL hockey rink's all the same. I assume most soccer pitches are.
That would be interesting if every arena, the net was a different height.
Yeah. See, so, like, the park itself can still be quirky. You can still have the funny features of wherever else, but the playing surface itself should be the same.
I think you'd have a point if the infield was different.
Yeah. The bases.
Like if some stadiums, the bases are 50 feet apart.
I know.
I think then you'd have something to complain about.
But baseball is such a numbers-based game, and Aaron Judge hit a home run in Yankee Stadium. Well, that's not a home run in Busch Stadium. Like, it's, you know.
But it evens out.
Does it?
Yeah.
Not if you're not if Aaron
if you're a
Judge
good
doesn't
hitter.
Play.
If Aaron Judge came here, he'd still hit 50 bombs.
You know, I hate when, like, say Jordan Walker hits a not a home run, but it's a pop out to deep right field, and somebody says, "Well, that's a home run in 13 out of 30 ballparks, not this one." Like, I hate that so much. Like, why can't it be our ballpark? I'm a fan of the Cardinals. I want the home run to happen in our ballpark.
Well, not when your team's pitching, you don't.
Okay, you know what?
Not when it's so. Well, it evens out, Matt.
I know.
Well, so, I think he's talking about individual statistics, not...
Who cares?
Not the teams.
I don't care. I really don't care about individual statistics anymore.
I thought that's all baseball cares about.
Not anymore. The home run record...
Okay.
No, the home run records have been broken, and that's the only record I ever cared about. They got broken. The consecutive games played streak, the Cal Ripken, that got broken. What do I care about now? The only thing, there's only one. There's only one.
Yourself. The
56 game hit streak. If that one gets broken, which I don't think ever will happen, then that would be impressive. But other than that, who cares about the stats?
Well, it could get broken.
I care about wins.
It could get broken if they mix up the distances between bases, then you're going to get some more hits.
Well, they're not doing that.
Well, that's our point.
So, Matt, what are you talking about then?
You want to break the hit streak? Make the bases different distances. That's going to really mess up some guys.
We'll not have a bigger infield because that's just who we are, and we do things quirky this way.
We make second base five times as big as the other bases.
But the ballpark dimensions aren't bad here. They're pretty normal. The problem is that, you know, it's the weather.
Weather?
Yeah.
So all stadiums should be indoor. We should build roofs over every stadium now.
I agree with that.
I'm writing that one down.
I'm writing that one down.
Horrible idea.
Every stadium should have at least a retractable roof.
That's your worst
every
idea,
stadium.
And you're basically a communist.
No more rainouts ever again.
I would rather seize
no more rainouts.
I would rather
ever
seize
again.
The means of production.
Retractable
and put a roof.
Roofs everywhere. Let's go. Great idea. Thanks for reminding me.
Dumb.
It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. When we come back, Major Garrett. Major is also the host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7. And Major Garrett also happens to be the only Padres fan I've ever met. Major is with us on 104.1 KMOX. The first place San Diego Padres. How's it going, Major?
Very well. I thank you for noting that. First place status for the Padres.
Yep. Yep. Hey, they're a good baseball team. Before we get into the crappy stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I feel like every time we talk, it's crappy stuff. You love baseball.
Mm-hmm.
What is a thing about baseball, however, that annoys you? Is there something about the game of baseball that annoys you?
Yeah, I really don't like the extra inning runner on second base, new rule.
The ghost runner.
I like most of the other rule changes. I like the pitch clock. I like three pickoff throws. If you don't get them in three pickoff throws, then the runner automatically advances. I'm fine with that. But I don't like the automatic runner to start the 10th inning. I would hold that off until the 13th or 14th inning. But I'm not going to win that battle. Major League Baseball has made that determination. So that's the one thing about baseball that annoys me, but not very much about baseball annoys me. It is a great game. It always has been, always will be. It's the most geometrical sport that you can watch, and it is the sport that has the most internal intrigue, play in and play out, and that's why it's the greatest game ever invented.
Oh,
wow.
See?
That is high praise. Well, thank you, Major. Well, now I'm gonna shift.
Okay.
I know.
All right,
I know. Ron, she's like, you bring up the bad stuff. Russia launches one of the deadliest strikes on Kyiv since last summer. Trump wrote on Truth Social, "Vladimir, stop," which has real Surrender Dorothy vibes to it, and a very serious situation. Of course, Donald Trump said going into the election that he could end this war in a day, in 24 hours.
Yep.
Where are this is, I guess, the first time that Trump is kind of almost called out Putin?
Yeah.
Where are we with this?
So we've experienced this in the first Trump administration. We are experiencing it anew. Not Russia. I'll get to that in a second. What we're experiencing is the idea that every day with Trump is a brand new day in the sense that nothing ever said before has any relevance to what happens today. This has been true with tariffs, has been true with lots of other policy things. Our adversaries, in particular Putin and Xi in China, remember things from a couple of weeks ago. I'm getting to the point with Russia. About 10 days ago, the Russians sent what's called a double-tap munition into a place called Sumy in Ukraine. Killed a bunch of civilians. What's a double-tap munition? It's one that explodes and then explodes a second time when first responders arrive. It is meant and designed to be lethal not once but twice. Lethal the first time, then lethal the second time when people responding to the first strike arrive. When asked about it, President Trump says it was a mistake. I think it was a mistake that Russia did that. If there's any kind of munition that could never be a mistake, could never be fired accidentally, could never be deployed in a mistaken way, it's this kind of munition. Why do I bring this up? Because Putin internalizes that in a very direct and simplified way. I will be excused for almost anything, even something that is intentionally lethal, not to just one round of civilians, but the responders who come to save those still living from the first round. That happened about 10 days ago. So I don't know why it would surprise President Trump at any level that Putin would continue to use destructive munitions, missiles, rockets on civilians. This is what he has been doing through all the ceasefire negotiations that have largely been rhetorical but not real. And one social media post that says, Vladimir, stop. I mean, it's almost, not only is it a surrender Dorothy line, it's like a parody of itself. What? Have you been watching what's gone on the last 3 or 4 weeks? I mean, yes, the Ukrainians will lob something here or push the Russians back here, but the vast majority of aggression all the while of the Trump presidency has been Russian, aggressively so. And the fiction continues to perpetrate that it is somehow Ukrainian intransigence that's the ultimate problem here. Well, when you keep confusing who started this war, that kind of misaligned judgment about who's really at fault persists. And that misaligned judgment about who's at fault benefits one belligerent in this war. And trust me, the Ukrainians are not the original belligerent. The Russians are. So the Russians remember, just as the Chinese remember. And the Russians were preparing themselves for a Trump presidency, just as the Chinese were preparing themselves for a Trump presidency. And the Chinese and the Russians are making it very clear they are prepared and willing to outlast Trump on whatever his social media post is or whatever his endeavors are if it conflicts with their short, medium, and long-term interests.
Meanwhile, the threat of tariffs, the implementation of them, the pulling back of them has created over the weeks a lot of confusion, and there are lawsuits that might be playing out in order to stop these tariffs from happening because of the damage they appear to be doing to the economy. What do we know about how he plans to move forward with them if there is an off-ramp? If something might happen here, is there any indication we'll have a resolution on this?
I can't answer that question. It's a great question. There is no answer to it because if the markets had it, they would respond in a certain way. If the Fed had a certain answer, it would respond a certain way. No one knows the answer to that question. Great question. Everyone's asking it. Nobody has an answer. But I do think I can cut through some of the mystery. This week on Tuesday was the most important day of the Trump presidency 2.0, Tuesday of this week. Three things happened that are enormously important. He called April 2nd Liberation Day. Tuesday of this week was Recalibration Day. These three things happened. One, in a reverse order. So I'll go to the latest thing, and then I'll talk about the others. The latest thing that happened on the Tuesday was on the earnings call for Tesla, Elon Musk announced he was backing off of Doge and getting out of a less prominent role with the Trump administration. The second thing that happened earlier before on that day, on Tuesday this week, President Trump, when asked by reporters, said he had no intention of firing Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell. And the third thing that happened on Tuesday of this week, Recalibration Day, I'm calling it, was Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary of the United States, declared what was going on with China was in effect a trade embargo, and it was unsustainable, and a deal would be struck. All three of those were rhetorical and policy reversals of enormous magnitude. Musk getting out of his prominent role, his radioactivity now clear politically to the Trump White House, and the roadblocks, legal and otherwise, to Doge cutting all the things it said it was going to, $1 trillion. It's going to get maybe $100 billion, which is not nothing, I grant you, but it's a far cry from what was promised. Trump, after badgering the Fed and the Fed chair and leaving it uncertain whether or not he would attempt to fire the chairman of the Federal Reserve, backs off unequivocally, and Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, declares something with China, a trade embargo, which, and you were kind enough to mention it, on America Decides, I opened my program on April 11th. You can go back and look at it. I opened the program saying, stop talking about tariffs with China. We don't have tariffs with China. We have a trade embargo. When our tariffs are 125% and theirs are 148%, no one's trading. It's an embargo. 11 days later, the Treasury Secretary said the same thing in a private meeting with investors, acknowledging something the Trump administration had refused to acknowledge in the intervening period of time. On Tuesday, all three of those things were recalibrated, meaning reversed. I'm not saying this is the end of everything. I'm just saying on Tuesday of this week, the super confident, super aggressive, it's all going to work because we know what we're doing. Masters of the Universe, Trump administration backed off on three significant fronts. And I think on Tuesday of this week might have been the most structurally significant of the first 100 days of the Trump presidency.
Major, in the aftermath of Signalgate 1 and Signalgate 2, as well as the firing of three of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's top aides, where do you place the stability or certainty of his position right now as Secretary of Defense?
So it's stabilized for a couple of reasons that are not related directly to the issues you just raised.
Okay.
One, Trump came to the conclusion after his first presidency was over that he fired too abruptly, that he either caved into establishment Republican pressure, media pressure, or his own internal whims, and that he maybe had hired poorly in the first place. The people he thought were loyalists weren't. So his inclination now is to stick with people, even if he thinks he might have gotten it wrong. But he doesn't want to bow to media pressure. He doesn't want to bow to establishment Republican pressure. He doesn't want to act as if second phase of MAGA has any cracks in it or can make any mistakes. Doesn't want to admit any of that, even though recalibration day this week suggested otherwise. But on personnel, he's sort of dug in. The second reason he doesn't want to fire Pete Hegseth among any of his cabinet secretaries is the White House and the MAGA social media echo chamber really worked its tail off to get him confirmed. Doesn't want to have put all that effort, which went through the nomination process, a grisly month of negative publicity in December, lots of Republican skepticism and resistance in January to push him over. All of that effort, all of that energy was expended to get Pete Hegseth in this position. So for those two reasons, quite separate from his capabilities or conduct, whether it's defensible or indefensible, they just don't want to give in on this one, because they worked so hard to get it, and Trump believes he fired too rapidly the first time around. Those are the things that are keeping Hegseth in position right now. Those are the things, not his capabilities, and certainly not his explanations or his attitude about doing something that is demonstrably wrong, demonstrably wrong. That is not a partisan observation at all. It is demonstrably wrong to share any sensitive information on Signal, an unsecured commercial app. Demonstrably wrong. And if you were a rank-and-file member of the Army, Marine Corps, Navy, you'd be prosecuted immediately. 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 You'd be court-martialed, and you'd be in a world of hurt. That's just a fact, and nobody disputes that. Nobody who's credible in this space disputes that. But he's a defense secretary, and he is, for the moment, immune from that level of accountability. And you would never share that kind of sensitive information on a Signal, unsecured commercial app, with your wife, your personal attorney, and your brother, none of whom has security clearance of any length, of any kind, whatsoever. It's just wrong, flat out wrong. But because of Trump's general sense, he doesn't want Hegseth to go, doesn't want to cave,
thinks it's an old story. It's not an old story. No one's ever done this before. It's a very brand new story, actually. He doesn't want to budge.
Major Garrett, any news for us on the thing?
I will have an announcement for you about the thing of the thing on May 12th.
May 12th. All right. Write it down.
I'm writing it down right now. I have one piece of paper. I wrote it down, and I will save this piece of paper.
You know, you can put it in your phone.
Oh.
I'm sending it to everyone I know on Signal.
Oh, okay. Well, on Signal. Don't forget the Atlantic reporter, though.
I'm calling Jeffrey Goldberg will be on it. Yes, it's going to be my super secret Major Garrett May 12th news. That's the name of the group.
Yep. Exactly.
Major, we appreciate you as always.
All right, we'll talk next week.
Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, Major Garrett. He is on America Decides on CBS News 24/7.
Hey, DMC was great on there. Two precursors to rap were Chuck Berry's Too Much Monkey Business and Bob Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues.
That was Dr. Durwachter.
I was a little worried about him halfway through, but he came.
I love that he took the time to think. So, yeah, apparently that is a thing that Subterranean Homesick Blues, some people think is like a rap precursor. He's not wrong about that.
Well, that's what, I mean, that's what Daryl McDaniel was saying. He goes, we didn't invent anything, we reinvented everything, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, the interview with DMC, really great. And DMC, along with Sugar Hill Gang, will be in St. Louis May 8th, performing with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, which is really cool. It's at Stiefel. Theater. If you want tickets for it, slso.org. And DMC did say he was going to come in and sit down with us in studio when they're in town.
We should get him and Stefan Denev together in the room.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, since we didn't have time for Did You See This, I do have a quick one. You know how the first week of May, I think it's May 7th, May 8th, is the deadline for the real ID across the country?
Oh, yeah, right.
You have to have the real ID or
you
can't.
If you want to fly.
If you want to fly domestically, you need the real ID. Otherwise, you'll have to bring a passport or you can't fly. So there's some compliance, but a lot of states, there are 30 states that have less than 70%, like right around 70% of their residents have the real ID. So there are millions of Americans. But let's say there's 30 states with only 70% compliance. That was on CBS News National. And they're talking about all these different states. And then they said, except for New Jersey, which has only 17% compliance. Why is no one in New Jersey getting their real ID? In all of the national news stories, all of the states are kind of on the same struggle bus, around the same level, hovering at that 70% compliance. And then every news story ends with, except for New Jersey, which seems to be only at 17%. Do people in New Jersey just don't care? Do they
I don't know, but
what's going
here's
on?
What I'm thinking.
What's going on in New Jersey?
Do you think the situation has his already?
Do you think it says the situation on it?
Do you think... He probably should have changed his name legally to the situation. And then he could have, then it could be on his ID.
Yeah.
But I bet he doesn't have one. And there are a lot of people in Jersey like him. So maybe that's the problem. There are a lot of situations.
Is Chris Christie not, like, you know, letting people know?
Oh, I bet he's got his real ID.
Do you think he's, why is he not telling his constituents?
He doesn't, he's not in government anymore.
You don't think he would, I don't know, speak out a little bit more? I mean, you're right. It's not his job anymore.
I really don't want to do this real ID thing. It just feels
like you haven't
like
done it yet?
No.
You're part of the 30%?
Yeah, that's right.
Unbelievable,
I will wait till the last minute.
This guy.
I don't really need one until like July.
What's going on in July? Getting married?
I'm taking a plane.
You're taking a plane?
Yeah. I got one of those real cheap flights from Southwest.
Yeah, he did. He finally got him. He got like a $39 flight. Every time I see those flights, it's always like $39, and you click on it, and it's like, do you want to go to Des Moines on Tuesday?
Yeah, it's...
No, I don't.
Oh, the place you want to go to, it's still $200 one way.
It was $800 to fly to Vegas last weekend, but I could have gone to Des Moines on Tuesday. Who wants to do that?
I don't... There's nothing in Des Moines. They have... Nobody lives there, literally. Des Moines not even
Des Moines
a real
is
city.
Is French for no people.
Chris and Amy show. We have the final hour coming up, and Danny Cohn is the president and CEO of the Jewish Federation of St. Louis, and he will be coming in next to talk about their mission and what's next for the organization on 104.1 FM KMOX.